Welcome back, folks. I'm Jake Ellenbogen. He is Gary Sheffield Jr. This is Yankees Unloaded. Unfortunately, coming to you after a Yankees loss. So once again, unable to put together multiple wins. They have not won multiple games in quite some time. The last time they won a game before yesterday was another blowout, and then they followed it up by losing. So look, we're going to talk about some positives in this show, and it's going to be at the beginning of the show. So for you positive people out there, your glass half full people, and we're not negative. I think we're just trying to keep it real on this show. But Luis Gil is the positive, okay? If I was to give an award out to anybody who really deserved to win today's game more than anybody, it was Luis Gil. He was fantastic. This is a tough lineup. I texted Gary, you know, during the game and, you know, before we actually went live, and I said, this is a horrible matchup for the Yankees. Like, honestly, Yankee fans can stop talking about the Orioles. I don't want to see the Red Sox in the playoffs, if I'm being honest with you.
Do we want to see anyone in the AL East?
No.
It's really sad. We can't beat any of these guys. And I do think it's fair for fans to point this out, because numbers are numbers. You can either get wins against these teams or you can't, okay? And frankly, we're just not beating these teams. We're not beating Baltimore. We haven't beat Boston.
No.
We're not beating Toronto. We're not beating these teams. And so to get back to Luis Gil, his last nine innings before this start, he'd given up 16 runs. Now, obviously, he was snubbed for the All-Star game, and to which I really wasn't that upset. If you give up 16 runs over a span of nine innings right before the break, you can't really expect a ticket in the All-Star game. Now, of course, if you spread those out, does it look not quite as bad? Sure, you can absolutely make that argument, but you can also make the argument that you give up 16 runs and three starts in a row, well, you're going to be part of the reason why your team lost three games in a row that you started. So hard to make the case. But having said that, today, I thought the strike zone was just absolutely putrid for both sides. It wasn't against us, wasn't for us. It was for everybody, okay?
The strike zone was all over the place. Was it the umpire behind the plate? Was it the K zone box? Because they just called everything a strike.
Ask me about Eduardo Perez?
Or was it the booth without David Cone? Because without David Cone,
I almost
Cone,
punched a.
Oh my God. Dude,
I almost punched my computer monitor that I was watching this game. Because I was watching this game on my computer. I almost punched my screen, and then I remembered the mute button was right there, so I did the responsible thing and didn't have to replace this very expensive computer that I purchased. So I hit the mute button and didn't have to listen to it. I was actually really sad I couldn't choose another broadcast, but I digress.
Yeah,
we're in a situation where the strike zone was so bad today that we actually had people on the broadcast bringing up Cutter Crawford and how he was making it through today's start, and how Luis Gil, how efficient they were being. And it really made me wonder, why in the world would New York Yankees hitters or Boston Red Sox hitters try and work counts and work walks when they're giving a foot off the plate on both sides? Of course you should be swinging first pitch.
Well,
that's no brainer.
We saw Devers later on. He swung completely out of the zone. Not that they would have called that a strike, but he really wanted to hit a home run. And he hit his second of the day on a pitch that was way out there by Tonkin.
He's going to be an all-time great player.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's a all-time great player adjusting to what the umpire is giving you. Now, most players in Major League Baseball can't do jack with a running fastball up and away. But when you're Rafael Devers, you can do something with that pitch. And he knows this coming into the game. He can do it against Gerrit Cole. He can do it against Weaver, Tonkin, you name it. So he came into that at bat knowing what the strike zone that had been established earlier in the game from first pitch, and he imposed his will. He seemingly always does against the Yankees. We're going to talk the rest of the team and just the offense. But again, we wanted to talk the positives. The positives were Luis Gil's fastball. For those of you who were worried about his arm and his velocity, it was there today. It was objectively there. He was sitting 98 to 100 miles an hour. He answered the bell. I do think his slider can have much more depth as his career goes on. But that's another story. In general,
it was good
stuff
tonight,
wise. Though. It was a lot to be pleased with.
Yeah, no, I agree. I liked his slider tonight. I really liked his fastball, like, you know, touch 98 consistently. The nine strikeouts. I mean, I told you off air. I had a feeling. Now, first off, I had a feeling they were going to win today, and they did not. Mm-hmm. But I was like, heels bouncing back. And then I really was like, heels bouncing back when I saw that he got snubbed for the All-Star game. I'll call it a snub because Clay Holmes made the All-Star game. And I don't mean to be negative towards a player that's on a team that we cover, because to be honest with you, good for Clay Holmes. You know, he deserved it if we're talking about the first 2 months of the year. But the reality is he has fallen off. And if you're going to, on one hand, hold that against Louis Hill, then you should probably hold it against Clay Holmes. Who,
do we have any folks in our comment section that are believing Clay Holmes is,
I don't know,
one of the best pitchers in the league right now?
I don't know a soul that is like, you know, Clay Holmes is a god right now on the mound. Like, I don't know a soul that is constantly going to bat for Clay Holmes. He's always had, and we had to defend him, if you remember, at the beginning of the year. We had to defend him because it is somewhat unfair. He's always going to be a Mariano Rivera shadow. He's nothing like Rivera. He's a, you know, bat to ball guy. He's trying to generate soft contact. And Mariano Rivera is trying to, like, if he generates contact, he's trying to shred your bat like his ball is a chainsaw. Okay. Like, when we saw that plenty of times with that cutter. So they're just completely different pitchers. Also, Rivera is, I mean, I would even go as far to say Rivera might be the most dominant pitcher ever, regardless of where, you know, rotation, bullpen. He was unbelievable. He felt unhittable 98% of the time. And when he blew a save, you were like, that guy had to earn it. Because going
when you, Rivera, well, the problem though with Holmes is that you would describe it anecdotally, he can be one of the best pitchers, if not the best closer in the league.
Yeah.
But that's only for maybe a 2-3 week stretch. We're going to ask our audience to buy into a guy who's extremely streaky. You want to play postseason baseball with a guy who might, broadcast is going to ooh and ah, and rightfully so, right? They ooh and ah about pitches that look like curveballs out of a right-hander's hand, a sinker that's an absolute bowling ball. But then the next week, he looks like he's not even a professional baseball player. How is that guy going to close New York? He's streaky by definition. If I look up in Wikipedia, streaky pitcher, Clay Holmes' name should be right there, along with a sweating Aroldis Chapman in the postseason.
Sweating.
So that's what we're looking at right now. And I'm not trying to be negative. I'm not trying to make fun of these guys. But they have to understand, Brian Cashman has to understand, that inconsistency in the bullpen combined with a lack of depth and injury-prone offensive players means L's in the regular season.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean postseason bursts and deep postseason runs. Yeah.
It always comes back to bite you, because you can say, like, everyone goes crazy when Giancarlo Stanton, you know, during his streakiness is hitting the cover off the ball. But when he's swinging and missing, you know, bases loaded and he's swinging a garden hose, that's when the streakiness goes the opposite way. And when you talk about bullpen, especially being a closer, there's not anything in baseball that would be more detrimental to winning a baseball game and not conducive at all to winning a baseball game than having a streaky closing pitcher. That is the opposite. That you do not want that. So I do think they will at some point make a move. I think there's a chance Tanner Scott will be the closer. I really believe that, because I think they're going to get to a point where the margin for error is so slim now, because the bats turn into this no-show today.
One wrong step, it's an L.
It's like they didn't even call into work and be like, hey, we're taking today off. Just none of them showed up. But, you know, they were there in person, but the soul, the heart, the mentality was not there. But all jokes aside, though, Keel was great. Going back to that, he really deserves a lot of credit. And the good thing is, Rodon wasn't bad the last start. So these are two guys that have really struggled as of late. And to see them both striking guys out, missing bats, and having the success they had, you know, I'm going to take that. I mean, Rodon gave up three in his last outing. He'll be pitching on Tuesday against your favorite pitcher of all time, Pepio. I think, like, with Heel, you know, nine strikeouts, and yeah, okay, he gave up some homers, but the reality is that should have been enough to get the win. And when you have Aaron Judge and you have Juan Soto and you have Ben Rice coming off a three homer game, you probably would have expected the Yankees to score more than three runs in this ball game.
Yeah, Is this really a surprise?
No.
Did people really turn on this podcast and think that, you know, us two, we're going to sit and put our heads together and really think about it and say, well, this guy didn't underperform and this guy didn't deliver, right? Soto went 1-for-4. He's sliding, right? He's hitting 200 his last 15 games. Were we really going to play the blame game on some of these guys who aren't performing? The real issue is that there are a lot of guys who didn't perform today.
Yeah.
We have expectations for them to underperform, which is why we've put such an emphasis on calling up some prospects that we see some promise in. We've brought up their numbers. We brought up the analytics, and we're not huge on analytics, but we know the Yankees are. So if you're huge on analytics, what analytically is saying that these players deserve a shot and these guys below who are performing and giving you an output aren't? And so that's the position we are in right now. And Jake, the player I wanted to circle today, and he's one of those players analytically, statistically, any other Lee that you can possibly give, is DJ LeMahieu and his speed and lack thereof. And for a team that hasn't stolen a base in 13 games, obviously a huge indictment on whether it be Anthony Volpe or anyone else who can run on this team. They've essentially eliminated the run game. And if these guys are not with speed, aren't going to bring any speed to the game, that I question your value. But let's go back to DJ LeMahieu. DJ LeMahieu is, we laughed at Stanton and his lack of speed, who's dealt with injuries over the years. Obviously, DJ's also dealt with injuries. DJ LeMahieu is objectively the slowest player on this baseball team.
I know even Trevino got over to third the other day.
Yeah. Like, yeah. So on August 3rd of 1493, Christopher Columbus began his voyage across the Atlantic, and he made it to South America before DJ LeMahieu made it from first to second base.
Oh my God.
That's where we are on this baseball team. He doesn't bring speed. There is no power. Obviously, he hit a ball off the wall today. Great. But again, most players in Major League Baseball can do that periodically. So that's where we are. We're in a position where any output whatsoever from a baseball player justifies their entire existence on the roster. People will say, well, DJ LeMahieu yesterday, and for those of you who are watching this podcast, this will be 2 days ago, and then yesterday, he had 3 hits between those 2 games. He must be completely ready to play third base every day for this team. DJ LeMahieu is hitting .194. His ops is .511, okay? They say he's on the field because of his glove. Which player can't run, can't hit for power, hasn't hit for power in years, is hitting under 200, Jake, and we're going to justify his existence? We're paying him $15 million a year to hit ninth, okay? Yeah. Now, nobody, and I mean nobody, Jake, not the comment section, not Michael K, no one at Yes, nobody else, not ESPN's ridiculously horrible broadcast. They're not even justifying his existence on this roster or that he should be on this team. Nobody's really calling for that. So it makes me wonder how egotistical can Brian Cashman possibly be? Because this is not on Boone. This situation is not on Boone. Boone's not making these calls. Okay. Brian Cashman is making a decision to keep these players, players that are not giving us an output. This is serious. You're paying a guy $15 million and you're going to tell me that the reason he's at third base or on this roster period is because of his glove?
You did the same thing with Donaldson.
You know what it tells me, Jake? It tells me that if Rizzo was healthy right now, Ben Rice would be rotting in the minor leagues.
Oh, yeah.
That's what it tells me.
I mean,
and that's a shame.
It's really a shame. I've said in other shows, we don't need to have this like this whole ceremony anytime. Like, they, you know how like the Yankees, when they call up a prospect for the first time, they always have to be like, they always have to pat themselves on the back. Like they're like, you know, oh, look at us.
The Yankees are thinking about calling up top prospect Spencer Jones. And then they look at us like, I wonder what they're going to say about it. Run it at Yes. Run it at CBS Sports. Run it on MLB Network. And then they call them up and it's this, oh, we've got Sunday night baseball against the Houston Astros. Spencer Jones debut right after this. Buy a popcorn bucket. We don't need it.
No.
Call him up on a random Tuesday night we don't care. Because all these games, whether they're the weekend, early, midday, don't care when the game is, we're all mad because we don't have enough decent and fundamental baseball players on this team. We brought up batting average. Batting average is a number that we've just thrown away as a league. Okay. And batting average isn't everything. There are guys with high averages that have all types of problems. Okay. But league average is hitting 240. Okay. Every other hitter on the New York Yankees combined, and I brought this up before, Jake, is hitting 202 outside of Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. It's a problem. You're getting a hit 1/5 of the time. So when runners get in scoring position and everyone says, why can't we ever just drive runs in? It's not bad luck. Ladies and gentlemen,
no,
this is numbers. A player hitting 200 on average isn't just going to, like a magician, just get better as soon as guys get in scoring position and pitchers are throwing more breaking balls and giving you their best shot. It's not going to work. So this team needs more players. And Jake, you've brought it up countless times. You've said we need to give a guy a shot, whether it be B-Boss, which we just learned it's B-Boss today.
Yeah,
guys.
B-Boss.
Right. So this is a guy performing. So if he comes up to the big leagues and he gives us nothing at third base or second base, wherever you want to play him, if he gives us nothing, at least there's some data as to why we thought he would give us an output. Nothing says that a couple of these guys, you can go three or four guys deep of why they're going to give us something tomorrow. We have no reason to believe that's the case. And until that happens, Jake, until I look at a lineup of nine players where I say, you know what, six or seven of those guys, and that's the overwhelming majority, six or seven of these guys I expect to get some level of positive play out of tomorrow, then the New York Yankees can expect to win. Until that happens, we're just holding on for dear life and just waiting around for the deadline when in reality, Brian Cashman really hasn't delivered at a deadline in a long time, if ever. So take your pick.
Yeah, I think it's definitely time to call up B-Boss. And I think, you know, even maybe Downs and maybe Peraza. I mean, the reality is you can't just keep, you know, chalking this thing up. I mean, look, JD Davis is nowhere to be seen the last, what, three games.
Yeah,
I'm fine with you like either playing him or just moving on from him at that point, because there are guys in the minors. I mean, TJ Rumfield, we've talked about, he also plays first. He's hitting over 300. Okay, so I wouldn't mind calling him up and having him back up Rice. I like the idea of giving him, you know, everyday reps if, you know, he doesn't have a spot. But, you know,
do you want to talk about that that dynamic, by the way, which you brought up before we recorded today? You brought up the dynamic of where Downs and B-Boss are playing defensively and how that might change where they get called up. I wanted you to explain that because I thought it was great.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. So all three of the guys, actually, B-Boss, Downs, and Peraza, all three of them, you know, pretty much B-Boss is always in the field, right? But they've been DHing Downs here and there. They've DH Peraza. I have all the numbers here for you because here at Yankees Unloaded, we're not just going to say a bunch of BS. We want to give you stats and analytics that we don't always agree with. But it's fair to give those out to you guys so you can make your, you know, conclusions and decisions.
Do what you will with them.
But let's start off with B-Boss here. He's got one error this year at second base, and he's played 183 innings at second base. He's played 84 innings at third base, which guess where he is right now? Third base. It tells me, even though he's been really, really good at second base, and he's played 183 innings of only one error ball, he's had 84 innings at third. He's played there recently, and he has not committed an error. And on top of that, we just talked about his last 15 games where he is absolutely tearing the cover off the ball. So right now, you have a guy in AAA, so not somebody like Spencer Jones who's in AA, not that that really matters, but he's in AAA. So the next step up is the big leagues. And you have a guy who is just getting better and better and better. He dealt with injuries at the beginning of the season. He's from the Dodgers, you know, their farm system. He was traded to the Yankees. The Yankees really identified him as somebody that they wanted. He's 23 years old and he's got a good glove. He plays the hot corner. He can also play in the outfield. He can play second base. He could probably play shortstop. But right now, B-Boss, if he's that good at, you know, third base, which by the way, zero errors, he should be not only in the big leagues right now, he should be playing over DJ LeMahieu, because you can't tell me LeMahieu's glove is so much better than Bebas, because first off, we've never seen him play in the MLB, you know, for the Yankees, but he has no errors and he's hitting way better. And the thing about LeMahieu is that there's still fans out there that like want to believe he's going to magically come back to form, which is not happening.
Are there really?
There are. But wow. When he hits an occasional line drive, he's supposed to do that more often than not. An occasional line drive is not justifying keeping him in the lineup. He's killing bug after bug. You know, Bug's Life is going to have another sequel to that movie, and the entire movie is just going to be from their perspective. DJ LeMahieu just swatting down baseballs.
Have you ever been on a batting cage date? Like you go on a date to the batting cages?
Every once
in a while. Like, okay.
That sounds
if
fun
that
enough.
Ever happens, every once in a while, you're going to hit a line drive. That doesn't mean you're just good at baseball all of a sudden. The good baseball players hit line drives much more often than you would. Okay. So that's really the gist of this. But Jake, basically my takeaway here is that between Bebas and Jeter Downs, it's that positionally, Jeter Downs is slotted at shortstop and just kind of a bat. And I don't know necessarily if that fits what the Yankees are doing right now or what they're prepping, because I would assume the Yankees are just living and dying with Volpe at shortstop, which I mean, I guess I understand. Not to say I agree with it, but I see where they're going with that, right? They don't want to give up on it. And you have Bebas who's hitting, but also I mentioned before the show started, and I want to bring it up on the show, is that making errors or having a lack thereof of errors doesn't necessarily make you an all-time great player or really good defensive player. Sometimes that means you don't have range, right, to get to balls. That's where the analytics come in. Now, unfortunately, Baseball Savant doesn't have those numbers for us in terms of the minor leagues. But we will say this. There are no bad defensive players who make zero errors in 100 innings of baseball. It doesn't happen, okay? If you watch bad defensive teams, I'll say this. The perfect example of a bad defensive team is the Cincinnati Reds. We just played them, right? Yeah. We got absolutely mollywopped by this team. And we came into the series saying this is a free-swinging team that hits at the top of the lineup, and they are putrid, putrid defensively. You hit the ball to second base, you can basically chalk it up that like maybe 1 in 4 times it's going to be booted. And long behold, they made errors the whole series, okay? But I will say this, those are bad defensive players. Bebas is at third base making no errors. At the very least, he's average at third base. Give me average defensively at third base with a bat over what DJ is doing right now. It's not close, okay? DJ LeMahieu with a objectively, statistically, analytically above average glove with a black hole with his bat, black hole with his legs on the base pass for a team fit-wise that hasn't stolen a bag in 16 games, get me an athletic young player on this team right now. I feel like I'm being positive in this situation. I'm genuinely hopeful that this might happen. Am I believing that Brian Cashman's just going to be smart tomorrow? No, I don't. But at the same time, Jake, they also called up Ben Rice.
Yeah.
Was that a side effect of Rizzo getting hurt? You can absolutely make that argument. You can make the argument that the Yankees aren't a smart enough organization to call up a more talented player in Ben Rice over an Anthony Rizzo. So will they make the decision to call up Bebas at third base, who's hitting, he's fielding, and he can play multiple positions? Can they do it? I'm going to see in the comment section, because we read all of our comments. Obviously, we ignore all the negative ones, but the overwhelming majority are baseball nerds like us who want to discuss the details of this team. If you care about the details of the New York Yankees, not just the big league team, but also the minor leagues, AAA, AA, all the way down to rookie ball, if you really care about this team, you will have noticed and you want to actually genuinely see what we have down there, because I don't want to hear at the deadline that the Yankees are excited about some prospect that they've got. And we sat there from by the time you watch the show, it is, of course, what is it, July 8th?
Yeah.
July 8th to the trade deadline. And you sat around watching DJ LeMahieu chop ground balls and jog around the base pass, and you're just trying to figure out what to do with Cabrera, and Torres is hurt with a bad groin, you didn't give any of those prospects you're in love with a chance. That just that doesn't add up to me. So the Yankees either believe in those guys or they don't. And I think right now, Bibas is forcing their hand, and we're going to see what they do with it.
Yeah. Actually, according to Fangraphs, I do have something here. Not a ton, but line drive percentage. He's increased that for his career high is now at 27.7. To explain, when he was with the Dodgers AAA last year at 19%. So he's hitting the ball way harder now. He's a way more, you know, confident hitter. He's striking out less. He had the injuries, and so, you know, he deserves to at least have that preface before you bring up, you know, how he struggled during the season. But he is really starting to come on strong. He's got 9 stolen bases. Peraza has 9, and Jeter Downs has 14. We also wanted to talk about him real quick. Jeter Downs, 274 innings, that short, 2 errors. So he could be like your backup shortstop, right? But then he's got 202 innings actually playing at third, and he has 6 errors there, which, you know, isn't the best. But again, context, we don't really have that, right? We didn't get to see those plays and all that. You know, at second base, he's got 28 innings at second base with 2 errors. Ultimately, Vivas is the best. You know, he's the best defensive player, I would say, of the three guys. Peraza is 167 innings at short, 5 errors. 77 innings at second with 3. 68 innings at third, believe it or not, with 0. So I honestly think, you know, and we know how this whole thing works, because the reality of the situation is that the deadline's approaching and one of these three guys is probably getting packaged in a deal. And that's just the way it is. And I'll tell you why I believe that. It's not just that, but also if you guys don't, and I don't know how to say his name, I think it's Cowles, but Ben Cowles, who was the 10th round pick in 2021 by the New York Yankees, he's at the bottom of the top 30 prospect list. I think he's 29th. He is hitting 301 with an 863 OPS, 8 home runs and 13 stolen bases with 85 hits. So at some point or another, he's playing shortstop. At some point or another, he's going to get called up to AAA. This is how this whole thing works. This is the roster movement we talk about. He's going to get called up to AAA, meaning one of these guys is going to have to come to the majors and probably another one's going to get shipped off via trade. But I guess I look at it and I hate to be this guy, but, you know, with Oswaldo Cabrera, and like, he wasn't bad today, but I mean, you know, we've touched on it. The analytics don't really show that he's a great player. Although we don't necessarily buy into everything that is being put out there, but it's like a guy who's struggled, I guess, with batting average, he struggled with on base percentage. Like, why have they not given a guy who's like, say what you will, Jeter Downs is even on the 40-man roster, which is ridiculous, but he's not. Bibas is. So like, I don't know how we haven't seen this guy yet. I really don't get it.
I don't either.
I don't know what we're waiting for. Like you said, I mean, we don't know exactly what his defense is, but just judging by the fact that he has not had an error at third base in 84 innings, he can't be bad at third base, because the hot corner is something that you either have or you don't in you. And he's not making error after error.
I actually just thought about something. So obviously the big gripe with the New York Yankees, of course, and Juan Soto is going to be a free agent at the end of the year.
Yeah.
Everyone's trying to figure out how Steinbrenner's giving, he's dropping little crumbs saying that the Yankees are going to be dropping that payroll, which is hovering around $300 million. Now, of course, the easy solution is finding contributors from your system, because those players are super cheap. That way, the players, the Gleyber Torres, you're fine letting him walk or trading him, right? Verdugo, you've got Dominguez or Jones to replace that bat. But those are cheaper moves to accomplish,
yeah,
right? So when was the last time the New York Yankees saw a player underperforming and said, this guy's not getting it done, let's call up this guy instead? I haven't seen it. I've never seen it, not one time. And it kind of goes to show you that the Yankees are allowing fate to determine who they call up and who they leave down. And they're allowing the potential injury of Giancarlo Stanton, because you have to remember the Yankees played with fire and they got burnt.
Yep.
They allowed Giancarlo Stanton and Verdugo to plug the major league level so that when Dominguez finally was physically ready and absolutely putting on a show in the minor leagues, they said there was no place to put him. So he stayed down in the minor leagues. The Yankees were waiting on an injury. They were waiting on the inevitable injury. And this was brought up on Michael Kay's show on Yes Network. They said, well, their big plan was that when Giancarlo inevitably gets hurt, Jason Dominguez is waiting in the wings. The role is yours, the starting center fielder for the New York Yankees, or you throw him in left field. That was their answer. Their answer to making roster decisions were based on future projected injuries. That's a joke. That is an absolute colossal failure. Ben Rice, you saw him, what will be if you're listening to this show today. 2 days ago, Ben Rice hits 3 home runs. Ben Rice is nowhere near a Major League Baseball field. If Rizzo was still hitting 204, and not he wasn't hitting at all, but he was still healthy. If he was healthy, he would be out there right now. And he was making this Yankees team worse than what they are right now. Ben Rice is a huge part of a solution, okay? Ben Rice may not be a superstar, but he is a solid player in this league, we believe.
Yeah.
But you can't possibly sit here and have genuine hope for the future when an organization only calls up prospects that they tell us they believe in when the guy ahead of them gets hurt. Not every player who's a contributor is going to have a Tom Brady, Drew Bledsoe situation where the dude goes down with a bum shoulder and then you throw in the future Hall of Famer. That's not the way the league works. Okay. The Baltimore Orioles, they had options over there at short and second. And you know what they said? Hey, go figure out a spot. Go figure out a spot for Holiday. They call him up right away as a 19-20-year-old.
There was no spot for him, by the way. None.
Not at all. But they call him up anyways. Why? Because it's a proactive organization that's not afraid to take a chance on a guy they tell us they believe in. Now, this isn't an Orioles show, but we want to cover a team with guts. We want to talk about a team with guts. If you have guts, have some guts and make this decision. Call up the better player. The better player right now is sitting at third base in the minor leagues than what we have making $15 million at the big league level in DJ LeMahieu. It's point blank period. There's nothing else to discuss about it. Anyone who's taking in this podcast should be able to admit, at the bare minimum, the Yankees need a league average hitter, a league average defender, a guy with some athleticism at third base. That would be a major upgrade as far as the others outside of Juan Soto and Aaron Judge. Right now, they've got a lot of guys with holes in their swings. They're not fast. They're not young. So, yeah, you have a choice to make, don't you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me, I don't understand, especially from Cashman's perspective. Like, this is your shining moment. You call up B-Boss and, you know, you've already called up Ben Rice. You call up B-Boss and he starts hitting well. And that's not just a guy that you guys drafted and developed. That's a guy that you went out of your way to trade for, you know. And you know, Downs was a pickup. No one in the major leagues wanted Jeter Downs and his giant name because people forget he was a huge prospect, right? No one wanted him. Okay, let's not forget, former first-round pick, considered one of the top prospects, was traded for, you know, of course, Mookie Betts. No one wanted him. So that's the thing, is that they go out and they sign him, and he's hitting well, and B-Boss, who you went out of your way to acquire, is hitting well. I mean, the ego that I, at least my ego detection would detect that, hey, these guys are still going to make Cashman look like a genius if they call any of these guys up and they start hitting.
Any of them. Take your pick. If you call, I'll tell you this, Jake, if they call up B-Boss, right?
Mm-hmm.
And this player who's giving us an output, this is outside of opinion. No one's opinion, just numbers. Okay. He's got power, speed. He's able to field multiple positions. If you need him to play second base, Gleyber Torres is hurt with the groin, or he's traded for Scott in Miami.
Yeah.
If either of those things happen, you have defensive versatility. You throw him over at second base. He's shown he can do it. He can do it at a high level. But what's so interesting here is that if the Yankees screw around for long enough, you've mentioned how close Boston's getting, okay? And
they have the time.
We have to remember this. Exactly. But let's remember this for a second. If we continue losing games at this pace and then we get to the deadline, the Yankees have said, we feel we can beat anybody. I mean, we're not sure why they are saying that right now, but you have to remember that going through the wild card, if you actually take a look at how the wild card's unfolding, you're seeing the Minnesota Twins and the Boston Red Sox. Well, we just told you that the Yankees aren't doing squat against the AL East. These are just numbers. They're not winning games. Now, you have to believe if the Yankees run into the Minnesota Twins, especially with some upgrades that we've mentioned, Scott's, right? We've talked about plenty of players in this league. I mean, we've had whole shows about it. So we recommend you going to watch those. But if you feel like if you run into Minnesota, don't you think that we can win that series? We've had their number over the years in general.
Yeah.
Of course, they had some success over us of late. But in general, we've beat that team. We feel like we have confidence against that team, maybe more than any other team in baseball. Then now when you win that series, you're just in the postseason. Now we're in October baseball. And if you haven't made enough necessary decisions to where you have enough big leaguers in your lineup, because if you don't, well, the results are is that we're going to have a big fest of standing around and watching Aaron Judge and Juan Soto. And if Juan Soto's walking and Aaron Judge isn't hitting homers, the Yankees are losing. And right now, the Yankees are losing. You can say it's because of pitching, but you can also say the two-headed attack with Soto and Judge, it's only a one-head right now. We've got Juan Soto doing a bunch of walking. His on-base is 400, spectacular. But you can't hit 200 when your on-base is 400, okay? Still really good, still really successful, absolutely. But when you have a top-heavy roster, the top's got to deliver, not by getting on base. They have to drive the ball. And that's a lot of pressure to put on those players. They can't just take the base. No. That's the position we've put Juan Soto in. He can't just take a walk. And so now we're just in that position. And frankly, I'm not sure what people can get excited about outside of a proactive decision from Brian Cashman, which, Jake, to be fair and to be positive here, it's right there for the taking. That decision could be made tomorrow. We have no reason to believe it will be made. But, you know, it's a lot of pride to be swallowed in this front office. And a lot of people have used these words. They've said that Brian Cashman wants to be the smartest man in the room. Now, a lot of people who cover the Yankees don't think that's true. They feel like Brian Cashman's remained really consistent overall with how he runs this team. He's just clean across the board. He's looking at analytics. He's looking at data. And he trusts his guys. But at some point, you need to stop looking around the room and saying, these guys are telling me this. These guys are telling me that. You need to just look at the obvious. And the obvious is promote better players than the players that you have in the room now. And that's all it is.
I absolutely agree. I think rapid fire to end this, to end it on a good note. In case you guys missed it for Scranton, Will Warren, the number 7 prospect yesterday, you're watching this on the 8th. So 2 days ago on the 6th, he pitched 6 innings, 2 hit ball, 1 run. And he had a career high 11 strikeouts. And this is somebody we've talked about on the show. We weren't super high on what we were seeing based on the statistical output, but this is a great stuff from him. And, you know, he's coming back from injury, so that's good. And then you had some line drives in batting practice from John Birdie, who continues to get closer and closer, taking grounders at third base today. And today I'm talking about on the 7th, so Sunday. So he's getting closer. And then you had Gary Phillips tweet out, Aaron Boone said that he doesn't think it'll be too much longer for Giancarlo Stanton. He didn't specify beyond that, but Stanton was only expected to miss 4 weeks and went on the IL on June 23rd. So, I mean,
I'm like sitting here trying to do my math. I'm like, June 23rd.
Can that be now? Like, can we?
Yeah. So when are we talking?
So, I mean, I tweeted it out today. I said, you know, so the Yankees lineup could soon be, you know, batting first baseman Ben Rice, second right fielder Juan Soto, third center fielder Aaron Judge, fourth DH Giancarlo Stanton, fifth left fielder Alex Verdugo, sixth second baseman Gleyber Torres, Seventh, Austin Wells at catcher. Eighth, shortstop Anthony Volpe. And ninth, third baseman John Birdie. And all of a sudden, that looks like a pretty darn solid lineup. So look, I'm not saying it's
just like we all thought. Yeah. Eight hitter Anthony Volpe.
It's not the best. And, you know, obviously we want B-Boss to be called up and all that. But like right now, John Birdie is getting close. But until I see him in that lineup, I think B-Boss should be playing third. And, you know, they should, because look, again, we've talked about it. At the very least, get these rookies an opportunity to get going before the deadline, because you don't want to trade these guys without seeing what they can do in the majors first, in my opinion. And by the way,
why is there such a priority about starters, by the way? What's the deal with that? Because I do notice that we always talk about, well, if we call up B-Boss, we can call him up in the meantime until Birdie gets here. Well, what if Birdie shows back up and B-Boss is actually hitting?
Yeah.
Well, then now you have a real asset on the bench.
Exactly.
We don't have a bench right now.
Well, and also, I mean, and this is the thing I laugh. Well, they want him to get their reps in AAA. Well, Oswald Peraza, I don't know, has a future with this team. So why would they care if he gets reps or he's on the bench? There's no direction for him. If I were him, I'd be asking for a trade. I'm not even kidding. I don't care that he's in AAA. I'd call up my agent. I'd be like, get me out of here. I am going nowhere. This is my career.
Well, a lot of guys want to play for the Yankees. I mean, which, you know.
Yeah.
But the gist of it is, to be called up by the New York Yankees, essentially you need to be the best hitter at that position when an injury goes down at the big league level for that position.
Hey.
That's your ticket into the big leagues.
You saw Hayden Wesneski. He's like, yeah, they just basically use you. They spit you out and they send you away. Like he, you know, and obviously I'm paraphrasing, not actually quoting him directly, but
it's the gist.
They traded him for Scott Efros, who was we'll probably see him this year, hopefully, as long as he doesn't get hurt, and could actually be a really key, important player in the bullpen. Took 2.5 years for that to happen, but that would be interesting. But Wesneski was a solid, like, potential fourth or even third starter in a rotation that they just often got rid of for essentially a middle relief pitcher, setup man. So that's just the way they do things. And, you know, again, like the whole, we talked about it, the whole like ceremony and having, oh, we need to get the crazy video, you know, montage going. It's like, just, I do not care. If I wake up and on my Apple Watch, it literally shows your B-Boss called up. I don't care if it's in pink lettering. I do not care how it's done.
Jeff Bisson can tweet this at 2:45 Pacific time AM, and I'd be thrilled. Okay, it's clear, Jake. We've done a really bad job managing the Yankees infield, whether it's putting too much pride in a certain player. But our infield is just treacherous, downright terrible. And there's no other way to put that. Okay. Ben Rice just got here. So no matter what you think about him, Ben Rice is he's got no skin in the game. He might be a really good player long term, but he just got here. And the only reason he's here is because Rizzo got hurt. So if not, our infield today would look like LeMahieu, Cabrera, Rizzo, and who else?
Well, let's go back to your comment. I think it was last episode. Third base is a premium position. That's where you're getting guess who plays third for the Red Sox? Devers.
Oh, it's unbelievable. So, can you believe that we do that? We allow Devers position to go field third base, and we throw LeMahieu at
the
third base.
The same position Devers is playing third on your rival team, and you're playing LeMahieu, and last year you were playing Donaldson, and the year before that you were playing Donaldson. I mean,
we've been bad at third base, man. We've been bad. Like, it to the point where you can absolutely argue
since A-Rod that
John Birdie is like the best third baseman we've had in quite some time.
Hold on.
That's a joke. Or this is how we'll wrap it up. When before the injuries.
This is how, because I'm going to go through on Baseball Reference, because they have the lineup, and I'm going to find. So obviously 2024, no. 2023, they list LeMahieu, obviously, you know, Josh Donaldson. 2021,
LeMahieu was terrible last year.
2021 Gio Urshela. Okay. I mean,
Gio Urshela probably hit 256.
He hit 267.
Okay. So we were close.
So, I mean, that's kind of like, well, it remains to be seen with Birdie. I would definitely give it to Gio Urshela.
I would agree.
But, I mean, Birdie could end up being huge down the stretch, which I think
they actually really got rid of Gio Urshela. Did you see? They said they got rid of him because defensively, which I didn't see this with my eyes.
They just dropped the ball. They said analytically he was.
Yeah, but they said defensively, analytically, he wasn't very good. So that was part of the reason why they thought that Donaldson's bat was an upgrade, and it wasn't.
I mean, they but also they gave up on Estrada, and he ended up going to the Giants and actually being decent. Thyro. But yeah, Gio hit 298 in 2020. In 2019, Gio hit 314. It's Gio easily.
Yes.
In 2018, Andujar hit 297 with 27 home runs. But, you know, again, as much as I loved him, because I loved the guy and I loved the most important thing was that he was homegrown. But the reality is he really struggled in the field.
He was terrible over there.
So he was a great bat, but, you know, and then Headley hit 273. And I was never high on Headley. I didn't like the trade, but he wasn't bad. Now, really looking back on it, 2016, Headley hit 253.
It's so mediocre, dude. We're like, this is the Yankees. We are like, we're supposed to be, because I don't want to say what Headley we are based on championships in 1998. I don't care about that.
Yeah.
Okay. These are still the Yankees, and part of that brand was built in those years.
Yeah.
But you've got to put better players out there in the field. You can't tell me that, oh, we went and got star power the way you guys said, and we brought in Juan Soto.
What was this 2014 team, clearly, by the way? I just came across it.
Which year?
2014.
Okay.
I mean, this is bizarre. All right, ready for this?
Yeah.
So Brian McCann, Mark Teixeira.
Okay.
Starting second baseman was Brian Roberts, 36 years old. Derek Jeter at age 40. Yang Hervis Solarte. I totally forgot about him. He was their starting third baseman. Solarte batted 254.
When was Starling on the team? Do you remember him?
Yeah, he
2012?
Yes, because he was part of the Stanton deal. So, okay. So that team also had a 38-year-old Alfonso Soriano. That team had Kelly Johnson.
Oh, my God.
That team traded for Chase Headley towards
the end of the season. We might as well just trade for Shelley Duncan tomorrow.
That team had Steven Drew, who batted 150. He had a 491 OPS. That team had Martin Prado.
Wait a minute. You said, what was Steven Drew's ops that year?
Steven Drew hit 491.
491. His ops is practically identical to DJ LeMahieu right now.
Yeah.
Which is 511.
So we have Steven Drew reincarnated.
Yes.
Francisco Cervelli, because, you know, in typical Francisco Cervelli world, hit 301. I never understood why he didn't play a lot. Like, he was clearly better than McCann at the end of the career, but
I literally just had dinner with Cervelli, like maybe a few months ago.
That's hilarious.
Totally random, but we were at like some baseball event and we just pulled up into a steakhouse and I just sat down and he was like, "Hey man, love your Twitter." And I look up and it was Cervelli. I freaked out.
He's one of the most underrated catchers. Like, he would just hit 300, but he'd be the backup. And you're like, and then you'd have all those people that went crazy for like Higashioka and he'd hit 199. They'd act like he was hitting 300. And it was like, yeah, what are we doing?
They'd act like he was Mike Piazza because he hit two
Mike Pizza.
He hit two homers in spring training when it's 95 degrees out. The ball's just gusting out to left field.
Dude,
and they act like he's literally a Hall of Famer. It's insane.
This team is wild. Remember Zoilo Almonte? He was on this team.
No, I don't.
I don't remember. Zealous Wheeler. Chris Young was on this team.
I remember Chris Young because he was a former Diamondback.
Yeah.
You're talking about the, yes, yeah. Chris Young, the left fielder.
I totally forgot Martin Prado was a Yankee. Like, I mean,
yeah,
he hit well for the most part. So, yeah, really, really bizarre there. 2013 was Nunez? No, Jason Nix was their third baseman. There's a pattern here. They really don't give a shit about third. Dude, this...
maybe. Okay, so when was the last time we won a World Series again? I just need my to refresh my memory.
It was 2009.
Man, should we sign a third baseman or should we just pick our butt every year?
I see the issue now. The scouting director was Damon Oppenheimer in the 2013 team, and we don't have him
because he blew up our roster. Is that why? Is that why his mother named him that?
So 2015, they made the playoffs and they lost in the wild card game against the Astros. That was when Keuchel had that obnoxious 1-0 complete game shutout. 2014, they didn't make the playoffs with the team I just told you. 2013, this team. Like, I don't even know what I'm looking at here. Lyle Overbay was the starting first baseman. Eduardo Nunez was the shortstop. Jason Nix was third baseman. 34-year-old Vernon Wells was the left fielder. Ichiro was the right fielder. Travis Hafner. It's like they took like...
the fact that whoever put that team...
they were just playing ESPN MLB 2K5 and we're like, let's just get all the best players and then let's put them on the roster in like 8 years.
That was the most New York Knicks, Dallas Cowboys signings you've ever seen in your whole life. And everyone knows that those teams really have only to do with hype. This was like the first year
Brendan Knicks Bosch.
Were like, we actually did something with Brunson. But this, what have we done?
Mark Reynolds, Kevin Youkilis.
Mark Reynolds. Man. Again, another former Diamondback. I mean...
the year before,
I'm starting
that,
to believe we should sign Connor Jackson to the New York Yankees tomorrow, and he could start at third base.
Oh, yeah. Oh, and then this team, 2012, that was the last time the Yankees had an elite third baseman. That was Alex Rodriguez. And I wouldn't say that year was elite for him.
What was the last elite year for Alex Rodriguez?
But I'll get to that. I need to know the year. But Eric Chavez was
oh, my
DH.
God.
Dwayne Wise was on this
play for the
team.
D-backs?
I know he played for the A's, but yeah, dude. Jason Nix was Andrew Jones was on this team. 35-year-old Andrew Jones. Ichiro was on two Yankee teams. That's kind of crazy.
We are a disgrace.
Chris Dickerson, Steve Pierce, Casey McGee, Melky Mesa. My God, Ramiro Pena. Oh my God, this is bringing me back. 2011. A-Rod, still not an elite year.
Okay.
35 years old, hit 276.
Yeah, it's nothing.
Yeah, that team was kind of more, I mean, yeah, there's not like any kind of memes in this one. Jesus Montero was on it. That's kind of funny. But 2010, they lost in the ALCS to the Rangers. Rangers spoiled the Yankees just so they could lose again with Ron Washington.
Okay, so Alex Rodriguez's last elite year in Major League Baseball was the year we won the World Series.
That's what I'm kind of understanding.
You're terrible at third base. It is what it is. We've talked about
they
second base.
They do not care.
Gleyber Torres is our second baseman. A lot of people think that he's past the point of recovery. We don't want to spend $85 million, $100 million on the guy.
Oh, my God.
Fine, by all means. The Marlins want to go do that. Let them do it. We have no second baseman. We've got guys performing in the minor leagues. You mean to tell me he can't go play second base?
Gary, why? This 2010 team, Marcus Thames, DH.
Marcus Thames is one of the nicest guys ever, but that is just...
I liked Marcus Thames.
I liked him, yeah.
But yeah, Marcus Thames, Ramiro Pena, Lance Berkman, Austin Kearns, Nick Johnson, Randy Wynn, Juan Miranda, Chad Huffman, Chad Muller.
Wait a minute. This is 2010?
This was 2010.
We did this after winning a World Series. We should be ashamed of ourselves.
So then the World Series team, obviously Posada, Teixeira, Cano, Jeter, A-Rod. And to your point, A-Rod, I wouldn't call it like his best, you know, elite season, but yes, that's the last elite, close to elite season that we saw.
He hit 30 homers and hit 286. Yeah, like, I'll take that.
Exactly. Johnny Damon hit 282, hit 24 bombs, hit six fewer than A-Rod. Like, what are we doing? At age 35. Melky Cabrera, Nick Swisher, Hideki Matsui, You have Brett Garner, Jose Molina, Ramiro Pena, Francisco Cervera, Eric Hinsky, Jerry Hairston, Xavier Nady, Kevin Cash. How about that, Kevin Cash?
Kevin Cash.
Angel Barroa, who, all right, this is funny. Angel Barroa won Rookie of the Year over Hideki Matsui because they would not consider him a rookie because he was older. And then okay. Barroa ended up on the same team and winning a World Series with Matsui. Matsui is
poetic justice, I guess.
No, the irony is that they don't win that World Series without Godzilla. Like, I mean, come on.
Not at all.
He was insane. I think he batted over 500 in the World Series.
Well, in the World Series, Hideki Matsui is our best player. So that easily. Just is what it is. He was absolutely easily. Clutch. And when we were on the road, people forget Hideki Matsui didn't play. He was a DH. He did not play in that series on the road. And he went out there and pinch hit. Opposite field bomb on the road, no problem.
Insane.
Like Hideki Matsui just delivered. And this is part of the reason why my dad has described Matsui as one of the most, he didn't say the, but he's one of the most underrated baseball players to ever live. And it kind of goes to show you how important, outside of Aaron Judge, Juan Soto, right? Maybe a Greg Bird for a couple weeks, or Greg Bird. I just said Greg Bird. Ben Rice. Yeah. Ben Rice for a couple weeks.
You just called him Greg Bird. That's so offensive.
Yeah, well, this will age beautifully if he just Greg Birds us. Like he just starts
hitting
homers in the postseason and then falls off a cliff.
Yeah.
But so I guess we'll see how that ages. But
the bird
just
is the word.
Goes to show you how utility players have an impact in this game. It doesn't matter if you have a team of Mike Trout and Shohei Ohtani. Yeah, it just doesn't matter. What matters is what the other guys can do. And then, of course, you need the star players to put it over the top when the season's on the line at the end of the year. Yeah. But you don't get there without utility guys, having depth, also being aggressive in the trade market. The Houston Astros, by the way, and I know a lot of people don't talk about this. The Houston Astros basically beat us out because of their aggressiveness on the trade market over the years. They destroyed us. In the trade market.
Yeah.
We said no to Justin Verlander. We don't want him. We don't think that he's worth the asking price. We don't think that he's worth the prospects you're asking for. And guess what? He was. He was absolutely worth it. He answered the bell in Houston. He essentially put a shot in the arm of his career. And the fact of the matter is, the Yankees have made a lot of moves that leads us here. It leads us to a path of where we're saying we've got guys hitting 210 at second base, third base. In contract years, no one can run. No one's young. It is ugly. And you just, Jake, you just went down 14 years of third baseman, and you named about two good names. Okay?
Exactly.
Gio Urshela was one of them.
Yeah, I think Gio Urshela and A-Rod have been the best. Headley was solid, but they gave up a lot for Headley. And, I mean, you know, I think Birdie, like I said, Birdie, the way he was playing before he got hurt, yeah, I mean, he's up there, but they do not prioritize third base the way they should. And it's exactly, I think today really should open up everyone's eyes. Rafael Devers is the most dangerous hitter in that lineup, and he's at third base. And the Yankees across, they have DJ LeMahieu. And that's how I want to end the show, because I think that we talked about some good, we talked about some bad, and we just talked about some ugly. So that's been a really good podcast, in my opinion. I think we covered everything we needed to cover. And, yeah, hopefully we get some news about B-Boss coming up, and you know, hopefully at some point we see Birdie and Stanton soon. But tomorrow, guys, just so you know,
we have an off day tomorrow.
We do have an off day tomorrow.
Good. Yankees, I'm gonna go smoke some Marlboros tomorrow.
All jokes aside, though, we have an off day as far as the Yankees playing. But Gary and I are going to do a bonus episode for you guys about the MLB draft. We're, you know, researching and trying to come up with, you know, different players for the Yankees to target. They're at 26th. Don't make a big deal about it. Don't throw a fit. You're going to, because I'm freaking pissed about it. The Dodgers are 24th somehow. So, you know, somehow that's the case, even though the Yankees missed the playoffs last year. But the reality is they're 26th in the order. The reason we've already explained in another episode, but we had way fewer subscribers, so I'll explain again. Essentially, they spent a lot of money in simple terms, spent a lot of money. They get penalized for doing so. So they got pushed down like 10, 15 spots, and now they're at 26th. And so, Gary, I'm excited to talk about that tomorrow because, you know, that'll be a little break from kind of what this really is right now. And, you know, talk about the future is something that I love doing, obviously. I mean, we just did, and we talked about the past as well. But there are a lot of opportunities there for the Yankees, and there is a player that I'm going to withhold. If you're on Twitter, then you already saw it. But there have been two players in my lifetime watching the MLB draft, because I normally don't watch it, but sometimes I get really interested in certain players. And the two that I really wanted the Yankees to draft, Aaron Judge, crazy enough, I swear to God, and last time, well, 2 years ago, because they got Lombard Jr. last year, Spencer Jones in the first round. So those are the two guys that they drafted. I was very excited about. I like Joe Adell, but he was never going to fall into the Yankees' lap. I like.
You were also high on Patrick Mahomes out of college. So
yeah.
And I've seen that tweet.
Okay.
I've seen the tweet.
Yeah.
So you're not just talking out your butt.
Yeah.
You actually said it when he was drafted. And everyone, I mean, some people would have said, oh, I can see where the talent is, but no one thought he was going to be Patrick Mahomes. So you seem to be over the target with the draft. And I'm here to tell you right now, based on what we talked about today, I am absolutely projecting an infielder. And we're not just drafting a shortstop. We are drafting a player that has got to fill a role in this infield because we are putrid in there. I don't care if it's right now, and I don't know if Volpe is going to be this way for long term. We've gone on for an hour and a minute, so I'm not going to go on about Volpe. But as of now, we're terrible at third, short, second, and for now, we're good at first base. So having said that, my draft pick, I'm going to spend a high draft pick trying to remedy that problem.
Okay. We'll talk about that because I have pushback on that, but obviously this would go another 20, 30 minutes if I, you know, explained.
At least another 20, 30.
I'm really excited about tomorrow because for those of you who want a Yankees Unloaded episode every day, well, you win tomorrow because normally we take an off day. But also for those of you who are maybe trying to get into the MLB draft this year, have no interest and maybe want a chance to have that sparked. Well, hopefully we're going to do that for you. I have a lot of experience covering the NFL draft, covered the MLB draft a little bit as a fan, but this will be more like, I guess, professional, less fan, but more like actual like analysis. So we're going to come to the table with our thoughts, going to talk about the makeup of this organization because that's where it comes from. And we're only going to touch on the first round. Maybe we'll bring up the second, but I think the first round is really the most important. We've seen guys in the past, Austin Wells, Lombard Jr., Spencer Jones, Aaron Judge, Volpe. I mean, first round picks tend to be the ones that make the show. After that, it's kind of up in the air. So we'll be doing that tomorrow at some point. Don't expect the video to come out right away because you'll be enjoying this video tomorrow. But we're really excited to record that later tomorrow night, have that for you guys. And then we'll get ready for Tampa. It should be a fun matchup. Pepio, your favorite, versus Rodon. And we'll see if the Yankees can get back on the high side in the win column and have some sustained success out of nowhere, despite not making any moves. Hopefully they make one. Who knows? But that's going to do it. We appreciate you guys. This has been episode 80, in case you guys didn't know and we're not counting. Episode 80. The shit's flying crazy. So we appreciate you and we'll see you guys soon.
You went an hour and 3 without cursing. He curses at the very end. Like this video.